Edition of Mornings for the Master. As was mentioned by Brian in the introduction, my name is Chip Horton, and I'm certainly tickled to be with you today and have the opportunity to study God's Word with you. One of the greatest privileges on the face of the planet, outside of being added to the kingdom through obedience to the gospel. Had a nice introduction given to us yesterday by our brother Chris McAlier as he looked forward to the broadcast that would be today in Nahum. So if you have your Bibles open, you can go ahead and be turning over to this great book. You know, there are some short books in the Bible. This ranks up there with some of those. It's only three chapters. Has 47, 48 verses or so. And so there is not as much content here as some of the other books, perhaps. You know, I like Obadiah. Obadiah is a great book as well. One chapter, Philemon, some of the other books that we could bring to our recollection. But Nahum is a great book, and Nahum is specific, kind of like Jonah was. Jonah had the burden upon him of going and preaching to Nineveh, right? And as we, well, I'm trying to think back. It seems like Jonah walked about 750 B.C., somewhere in that neighborhood. And then as you look down chronologically, you have the opportunity to think about the captivity of Israel. That would come about 722, 721. And so some 28 or 30 years, give or take, after Jonah prophesied, Israel would go away in captivity. Nineveh would take them away. Ultimately, Assyria would take them away into captivity, as was prophesied. And then Nahum comes along. As I understand the chronology of the prophets, about 620. So if these years are, you know, correct, then we're looking at about 125, 130 years after Jonah, and that Nahum has the opportunity to go back to Nineveh. And so Nineveh is the subject of this particular book today, the downfall of Nineveh. It's exclusive. And so there's no prophecy, you know, that I can tell, unless I've missed something, that relates to the Christian dispensation. Nahum didn't have any prophecies of the redeeming Messiah, you know, the King and Redeemer of our souls. Nor do I read anything in here about the eternal kingdom, you know, those obvious things that you see in Isaiah and Daniel and even in Joel. But that doesn't mean there's no content here. As Brother Chris alluded to yesterday, verse number 7 here in chapter 1 is one of, and my lands, there's many, but one of the most beautiful passages that consoles the suffering Christian. We must all, in some form or fashion, face persecution, face suffering, and from time to time we get that we get that Elijah syndrome, that Jeremiah syndrome. We think, you know, I'm done. I'm going to give up. I'm through. People aren't listening and things of that nature. But remember, the Lord is good and a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that trust in him. And isn't that comforting? Comes to mind also maybe John 15 and verse 14. You want to be the friend of Jesus? Isn't that an amazing thought to know that you can be friends with Jesus? There John says that Jesus said, if you will be my friend, you'll do whatsoever I command thee. So a lot of comforting things that we do find, even in a book like Nineveh, that talks about a nasty people like Nineveh. So that's what we're looking at today in the book of Nahum in these three chapters. I don't know what time will allow us, but we'll comment as much as we can about these three chapters. Welcome to you today. We're glad to have you aboard as we study. We are grateful to have those dedicated listeners that listen every day. And we recognize you on a regular basis because we appreciate you so much. I know my lovely wife is out there listening, and I appreciate that very much. She's a great encourager. She's my Barnabas. Grateful to have Miss Frida aboard out there. I know she's out there on the highway listening today in her log cabin of freedom out there. Good morning, Miss Frida. I'm waving at you here. I see you waving back there. So many of you that listen regularly, Jeff out on the East Coast, I appreciate him and his family and what he does for the kingdom. I know Mom and Dad listen pretty regularly, and they're always great encouragers. I know Miss Ann and maybe even her hubby David are listening down there this morning in Winsboro. Brother Chris, as he goes about his daily chores, I know he turns on the Gospel Radio Network. So many of you, you know, that listen in regularly and use the chat box, again, which I do not have open today. My apologies to you, but that doesn't mean you can't continue to chat one with another. Use that and, you know, be benefited by that today. But anyway, we're grateful that you're listening. We were just recently holding a meeting over in Virginia, and we exalted them. We asked them to, you know, be a part of the network because they are so valuable to God. And so we're looking forward to many more listeners being picked up over there. So if you're over there in the Gloucester or Hayes area today and you're listening, well, then welcome. Glad to have y'all in. And so to everybody that's taken a moment out of their busy schedule this morning, we just want to say thanks. The Gospel Radio Network appreciates you. And if you like what you hear today, if you're impressed with, you know, the way that the network operates, the ability that it has to reach around the world, then, you know, do us a favor and maybe tweet something out or send something out on Facebook or email somebody today and tell them about the Gospel Radio Network and how she benefited you today. That's the greatest compliment, the greatest advertisement that we have. And so if you could do that, we'd appreciate it. We sure would. We don't really have any announcements before us today. The Bible Bowl, you know, has just taken place for the month of November. And so we're looking forward to that event even next month, second Monday in November, December. Can you believe it's fixing to be 2018? Whew, man, where does time go? Anyway, the only other announcement that I have is I'm continuing to tell people, I'm continuing to beat the drum for my brother Rafael Barantes as he is opening his school of preaching in Costa Rica. And it will be the only school of preaching in Costa Rica, a country of about 4 million people. And, you know, the way border security, the way, you know, immigration policies are being affected today in our national government. The way these things are rolling out, individuals like Rafael's soon-to-be students, if they wanted to come to the United States and study, it's much more rigorous for them to do that nowadays. And I'm not complaining, don't get me wrong. We need border security. But it does make it harder. So what do we do about that? Well, we open a school of preaching in Costa Rica, and those individuals can flow freely within the country and come and learn to preach the gospel. They can go out and fulfill the, you know, that great commandment that Paul gives to young Timothy in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 2, preach the word. You know, this ability that we have to train others also, as Timothy was told as well, that is something that we need to take seriously. And so, if you'll look at your map one of these moments, And notice where San Jose, Costa Rica is. It's right in the middle of the country, almost geographically dead center. And so being located right in the center of the country, everybody has the same access to the school. So we've been beating the drum about this. It's going to open up in the first week or two of January, which is almost here. And he still hasn't raised all of the financial support that he needs. We need to continue to beat the drum so that they can get off to a good start instead of a, shall we say, rocky start, not knowing about future financial aid, et cetera. Got another message yesterday through a good friend of ours that their congregation is going to help with $200 a month starting in January. And so as these continued support letters come in, we're edified. We're lifted up and just tickled that he's going to be able to do this starting in January. But we still need more funds. We still need more help from you. So if you're listening this morning, in whatever capacity you find yourself, certainly prayers are a benefit. Pray for that work. Pray for Raphael and Katia as they are starting. If you can send financial aid, there is an overseeing congregation in Greenfield, Tennessee, one of our faithful broadcasters that is on the network on a regular basis, Brent Arnold. He is the minister there at that good congregation. And so if you have funds that you would like to get to Costa Rica, you can send them to the eldership there as they oversee this particular work. Be glad to give you that information if you'd call me. You can call us here at the building at 903-537-4129. Young Keacher will put you through to me. Or you can contact us through even mornings@tgrn.org. Just plenty of ways to get in touch with us, and we'd like to help help Raphael in whatever way we can. Anyway, continue to pray about that. And, again, if I can answer any questions along the way for you, boy, I'd love to do that because he is certainly deserving of our support on whatever level it may be. Well, let's launch out into Nahum. You say it how you will. There's not a lot that we know about the man himself. And that's not really a big deal to me. I mean, if God chose him, then that's all that needs to be said, really. But it's kind of interesting to try to dig up a little bit about him and try to find out what we can. And the Bible gives us very little. We know that, he has this singular task of talking about the downfall of Nineveh. His name, according to the Hebrew scholarly individuals that write, that we had the privilege to read, evidently means counselor or even comforter. I've seen one author that put consolation. And so we do know a little bit about his name. He gives us the fact that he is from a little town of Elkosh. But I don't know where that is. Things have changed over the years. I believe one author that I read recently said it may very well have been around Capernaum, where Jesus worked quite vigorously. But we don't know that. So there's a whole lot of things that we don't know about Nahum. But what we do know is recorded in these three chapters. He alludes to at least the overthrow of Thebes down in Egypt. And history records, now not the Bible, but history records that that happened around 663 or 662 B.C. And again, considering that he was preaching around 620, as we mentioned, you're looking at about a 40-year difference there. So this is something that definitely would have been probably in his lifetime, something that mom and dad could have told him about, or something along the way, certainly given to him by God, as he wrote by inspiration. He also foretells about Nineveh's destruction. And we believe that that took place around 612, give or take. Again, we don't have exact dates, but if he were speaking in 620 and the downfall of Assyria actually took place in 612, obviously we've got a difference of about 8 years. So I don't have a lot to tell you about the man himself. The book is pretty easily divided. I have, and I'm not sure where I got these. I've got scribbles all in my Bible here. This is probably one of Richard's great sermons that he gives regularly here. But I have chapter 1 as destruction declared. Chapter 2, I have penciled in here destruction described. And in chapter 3, I have in the margin here destruction defended. These are just simple little notes that we make in our Bibles to help us, you know, like when we looked at Jonah, running from God, running to God, running with God, running ahead of God, those four chapters. That's the way we normally exegete Jonah. So much of this is just to help our memories as we think about the way the book is unfolding in front of us. You know, we saw a sense of repentance. We saw after Jonah's eight words were preached, we noticed that Nineveh did turn. There was a proclamation made. And so repentance is seen. The city was in sackcloth and ashes. Remember, Jonah was upset about that because he said, "You are a merciful and long-suffering and generous God. I knew that this is what was going to happen. That's why I didn't want to go to Nineveh to begin with." Now, what Jonah was talking about is much the same thing that they returned to, and that's the reason that they're going to be destroyed here. But Nineveh was a gigantic city. I think the walls, maybe there was a circumference there, something like 60 miles. I mean, it was a pretty big place. The wall itself is something that writers have written about for centuries because it was so incredible. It was wide enough, thick enough, if you will, that three chariots could run across the top of the wall side by side. It was it had numerous towers in it. You know, there's just a lot that we have read through the years about the city itself. Well, she was a nasty city. The people were given over to various tragedies like idolatry and to heinous behavior as it relates to the destruction of other individuals. They were highly equipped for war, and when it came to war, they were a very nasty people. A lot of things that we could speak of about their nature and about their mannerisms as it relates to war are really not fit for radio this morning because we're still sitting around the breakfast table in many places, and so I'll spare you that. But, you know, if you're the Bible student that I think that you are, you probably already heard most of those things, and you know what it is to which I'm alluding. And so, having all that behind us, knowing about Jonah, and then knowing here so many years later, 120, 130 years later, how this has multiplied in Nineveh, God now foretells their destruction. You know, it's interesting how quickly man can fall away, how quickly man can move in the opposite direction. I'm reminded of the perfect, beautiful earth that would be seen by Noah and his seven family members as they stepped off the ark that day, as they would breathe that fresh air, as they would see that beautiful new earth. I can't even imagine the glory that they must have beheld. But it was only 100 years before we would read about the Tower of Babel. 100 years down the road, and already they're beating their chest saying, "Look at me. Look at what I have accomplished. We'll build a tower so that everybody knows how great we are." And so here, again, in kind of that kind of a context, notice 120, 130 years, you know, again, give or take a few, after the repentance that we see in the book of Jonah, here we are again. And it looks like it's two or three times as bad as it was even in Jonah's day. So how quickly we can fall away. We'll read a little bit of this and try to wrap our heads around some of the thought that we're seeing before us. Let's read the first eight verses. The burden of Nineveh, the book of the vision of Nahum the Elkoshite. God is jealous and the Lord revengeth. The Lord revengeth and is furious. The Lord will take vengeance on his adversaries, and he reserveth wrath for his enemies. The Lord is slow to anger and great in power, and will not at all acquit the wicked. The Lord hath his way in the whirlwind and in the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. He rebuketh the sea and maketh it dry, and drieth up all the rivers. Bashan languisheth, and Carmel, and the flower of Lebanon languisheth. The mountains quake at him, and the hills melt, and the earth is burdened at his presence. Yea, the world and all that dwell therein. Who can stand before his indignation? And who can abide in the fierceness of his anger? His fury is poured out like fire, and the rocks are thrown down by him. The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knoweth them that trust in him. But with an overrunning flood, he will make an utter end of the place thereof, and darkness shall pursue his enemies. We have this opening about this destruction that is coming, and we have this picture that Nahum paints, not an unfamiliar picture, but nevertheless a picture that is painted even by the great poet and writer Nahum as he writes by inspiration. Really, the vengeance that belongs to God, and ultimately we understand that that does belong to God, and also we see the mercy of God, this power that he has described at the top of the chapter, and then coming down, the Lord is good, the Lord is stronghold, and we understand that he is able to comfort us. And again, this is one of those moments in time where we remember where they were in Jonah's day, right? And then now how they have removed themselves. I kind of look back, or forward, rather, to Matthew 23, where Jesus looks out and says, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you know, here's the opportunity that you squandered." And again, Nineveh, they squandered an opportunity. At least in the book of Jonah here, we have God looking favorably upon this Gentile people, a people that God would soon use for the disciplining of his own children, the Hebrew nation. And so at one time, they were able to stand clean before God because of their repentant heart. But, again, we understand that when you turn away from God, then you can expect his vengeance and his wrath, his anger, right? The Lord is slow to anger. But even as Peter would point out, you know, there is coming a day when he's going to flip that switch, and vengeance then belongs to him. And so it would be to our benefit to obey him completely, and understand how much he really loves us. You know, the power of God is opened up here before us. He rebuketh the sea and maketh it dry. Verse number 4. Now, immediately, my mind goes back to the Red Sea. My mind goes back to the Jordan, right? Where he would actually open those bodies of water up, and the children of Israel would cross in both occasions, as on dry land. And that's amazing, but that points out, excuse me, the power that God has. These great fertile locations that are mentioned here in verse number 4, Bashan, Carmel, Lebanon. These individual places, look, languisheth. He can cause even the lushest of ground to languish, right? It's according to his great power. He can do that. And so the mountains quake. Who can stand before his indignation? Well, that's a rhetorical question here in verse number 6, right? No one can. His fury is poured out like fire, like fire. You know, I'm immediately reminded of the power that hell holds for the devil and his angels and all those that would choose to live ungodly, those that would choose literally to go there, as you see in the Thessalonian work there. You know, that's something that we choose. And so these individuals that are being pointed to here, even in Nineveh, had chosen to taste of his wrath that was like fire. Even when you see the rocks thrown down, many battles that God would fight for Israel, he would cause chariots to be swallowed up by a flood in what was once a dry riverbed. He would cause hailstones to come down on the enemies of Israel. He would certainly cause the sun and the moon to stand still. God has infinite power. And that's exactly what Nahum is talking about here. But notice the Lord is good. Man, you know, this reminds me of that writing in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 2. Preach the word, right? Be instant, in season, out of season. Reprove, rebuke, we understand as negative parts, right? And exhort. And so here we have this scary picture of the power of God, what we truly deserve, right? His anger, his wrath for what we have done in sinning, right? All have sinned, Romans 3 and verse 23. But notice that he is good, and he knows them that trust in him. Certainly comforting words, even from Nahum. As you read on, we read on, even moving forward out of verse number 9. We'll read down to this good place here, about verse 13. What do ye imagine against the Lord? He will make an utter end. Affliction shall not rise up the second time. For while they be folden, that is, in a sense of security, I guess, together as thorns, and while they are drunken as drunkards, they shall be devoured as stubble, fully dry. You know, I guess that's a good place to stop there for a second. You know, people that make themselves drunk, they have this false sense of security, don't they? How often do you see the drunkard want to fight? You know, he thinks that he's indestructible, right? He has this false sense of security. The pain that he was feeling before he started drinking is gone. He feels better, he thinks. And so here's this false sense of security pointed out even by Nahum. Verse 11, there is one come out of thee that imagineth evil against the Lord, a wicked counselor. No name here, but certainly an attitude, one that would stand against God. Thus saith the Lord, verse 12, though they be quiet, and likewise many, yet thus shall they be cut down when he shall pass through. Though I have afflicted thee, I will afflict thee no more. For now will I break his yoke from off thee and will burst thy bonds asunder. And so, notice the language that we've seen. Verse 8, utter end. Verse 9, utter end. Verse 12, cut down. Verse 13, break his yoke, burst thy bonds. And then as it continues in verse 14, cut off, utterly cut off in verse 15, you get the picture? Those that stand against God, even here as we look toward the Assyrian nation, as you continue to think about those individuals that would stand against God, they will be cut off. And so here is chapter 1, destruction declared. Those that stand against God will be destroyed. And that's the same promise that we have today, right? And so we think about the Great Commission. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. He that believeth not, and ultimately is baptized not, shall be condemned. And so we have this wonderful opportunity here right now to avoid destruction by being obedient. It's really just that easy. But it is the process of making a choice, even in our own minds. And so, verse 12, no matter how many they are, though they be quiet, though they be many, when I pass through, you know, there's going to be destruction. And as I think about this idea of passing through, God says, I look back to the day that Egypt saw the death angel pass through their midst. You remember the destruction that took place that day? Those that were stiff-necked, those that would not heed the warnings of God, though the continued miraculous events would happen in their midst. And they could see, even after that third miracle, even they could see that the land of Goshen was protected. Man, I would be trying to figure out how I get into the land of Goshen, how I could be among the saved, how I could be among those that were not seeing that wrath. But nevertheless, they lost all their firstborns that day. So what a horrible day. When I pass through, I will make thy grave, verse 14, for thou art vile. Whew. There's a lot of strong statements in the Bible, but to have God look you square in the eyes, even as Nahum would preach and say, thou art vile. Man, that's just about as strong as it gets, isn't it? To have God tell you, you are vile. And that's just scary because I look around me. I see heinous events, school shootings. I read about this sexual harassment garbage that's constantly taking place now, it seems, in the news media. You know, these reports that keep coming in about another individual that has molested another individual. That is, what does God say here? Let me go back. For thou art vile. We're surrounded by vile people, aren't we? And so we should be encouraging them, please turn away, right? The same message that Jonah would give. Destruction is coming. And so we still, today, as long as God gives us the breath of life, we have the opportunity to repent, even like Nineveh did in the long ago. Well, chapter 2, destruction described. We begin and jump out into this particular section of scriptures, beautiful in its own right. Destruction described, chapter number 2. Let's read the first 7 verses. He that dasheth in pieces is come up before thy face. Keep the munition, watch the way, make thy loins strong, fortify thy power mightily, for the Lord hath turned away the excellency of Jacob as the excellency of Israel. For the emptiers have emptied them out and marred their vine branches. The shield of his mighty men is made red. The valiant men are in scarlet. The chariots shall be with flaming torches in the day of his preparation, and the fir trees shall be terribly shaken. The chariots shall rage in the streets. They shall jostle one against the other in the broad ways. They shall seem like torches. They shall run like the lightnings. He shall recount his worthiness. They shall stumble in their walk. They shall make haste to the wall thereof, and the defense shall be prepared. The gates of the river shall be opened, and the palace shall be dissolved, and Huzeb shall be led away captive. She shall be brought up, and her maids shall lead her as with the voice of doves tabering upon their breasts. She, I believe here, talking about Nineveh. And so there's a lot to consume here in this first couple of verses. In verse number 1 of chapter number 2, the one addressed is Nineveh, right? And we know who's being talked about. The one who is to dash Nineveh to pieces. It's not identified, but, you know, history, you know, you remember the image. You remember the image that Nebuchadnezzar would be shown. History shows us that, you know, the Babylonians, the Medes, these individuals, they would, you know, come down one right after another. And so, you know, this process would begin to take place. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar, as the Babylonian king, would be told, "Thou art this head of gold." And so this time that marches on, we understand who these individuals were. The Assyrians, they had abused the people, you know, these subjects that they had conquered. They had been harsh with them. They had treated them inhumanely. They had been an evil, nasty people. And so God, as Daniel would certainly foretell, God is in control, and he sets them up and he takes them down. The same way that he deposed Saul after he set Saul up, he still works even today, setting them up and taking them down. And so God is still in control. God will always be in control. Notice verse 2, the Lord hath turned away the excellency of Jacob. You know, this idea of turned back the excellency of Jacob depends on, you know, exactly which version you're looking at. I know that in the American Standard, here in verse number 2, it says, "For Jehovah restoreth the excellency of Jacob as the excellency of Israel, for the emptiers have emptied them out and destroyed their vine branches." So we see this restoring that's taking place. We understand that God has a plan for his people. And so the nation of Jacob, I mean, we're talking about the Israelite people here, right? They had been emptied out by their enemies. You know, Assyria would take and spread them across the land. They would scatter them to the wind, as it were. And, you know, and the Assyrians had come through and they had destroyed the land of God. And so this is something certainly horrible to remember. The Lord doesn't really reveal to us, you know, the emptiers, but you and I both know, you know, who that is. We understand what has taken place. Verse 3, the shield of his mighty men is made red. Well, what do you think we're talking about here? Well, we're talking about bloodshed, right? We're talking about the shedding of blood. War is a bloody act. And so what we're being shown here, remember our title, Destruction Described, we're getting some details here. And one of those details here is scary to even imagine. A lot of blood being shed. The chariots shall rage in the streets, run and seem like torches. Again, here's some pictures that are being given to us. Raging, you know, this idea of swiftness and carrying out this slaughter that's talking about, depicted as flashing. You know, maybe, you know, when lightning flashes, you know, you've got no chance to run from a lightning strike. When it hits the tree, that's it. And so this quickness mentioned, perhaps, this flashing. The gates of the rivers shall be opened, and the place shall be dissolved. You know, this is something that is taking place under God's hand. God is taking care of all this. And so Nineveh's shame is being exposed. You know, we can hide things from our fellow man. But we cannot hide those things from God. You know, many times after an individual has passed away, and whoever, relatives or police or whoever it is that goes in after this event, things are revealed. Oh, well, I didn't know he was a musician, or I didn't know, you know, that he looked at these particular things on the internet or whatever. And so Nineveh would be exposed. This is the description that we see of the destruction. Nineveh, verse 8, is of old like a pool of water, yet they shall flee away. Stand, stand, shall they cry, but none shall look back. And so here's this picture of Nineveh, you know, maybe even at one time like an oasis. Think of the fertile area in which they are dwelling. This area that they live in, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is still part of the Fertile Crescent, a very lush piece of ground. But not necessarily, look what they have, again, squandered, what they have despised. Take ye the spoil of silver, take the spoil of gold, for there is none end of the store and glory out of all the pleasant furniture. She is empty and void and waste, and the heart melteth, and the knees smite together, and much pain is in all loins, and the faces of them all together, or all gather, rather, blackness. Where is the dwelling of the lion, and the feeding place of the young lions, where the lion, even the old lion, walked, and the lion's whelp, and none made them afraid? The lion did tear in pieces enough for the whelps, and strangled for her lioness, and filled his holes with prey, and his dens with raven, that is the idea of spoil. Behold, I am against thee, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will burn her chariots in the smoke, and the sword shall devour thy young lions, and I will cut off thy prey from the earth, and the voice of the messenger shall no more be heard. Here is a strength that they had attained and had abused. You know, it's like the internet. The internet is an incredible tool, but in the wrong hands, it can be used to destroy people's identity, steal those identities, abuse those things. It can be used for the displaying of filth. It can be used for many awful things. But, you know, here at the Gospel Radio Network, we have chosen to use this magnificent power that stretches around the world for preaching the gospel. Notice then what happened. God says, I am against you. All right, the end of chapter number 2. What was the end of chapter number 1? Thou art vile. Remember in verse number 14. And so notice, they had reached a point. They had reached a strength. They had food in every cupboard. They had plenty of supply. They had everything that their hearts desired. And they threw it all away. And so he says, I am against thee. I will burn her chariots. I will cut off thy prey. And so notice that there is coming a time, as in Nineveh, there is coming a time for all of us when that great judgment will be passed. Hebrews 9 and verse number 27 says, it is appointed unto man once to die. And after that, what? The judgment. And so two things that you can count on, and that is death and the judgment. Now, again, as you look into 1 Thessalonians 4, you know, we may not taste of death if he comes tonight. There's many listening today that will be able to take part in that resurrection in the air. And so there's a lot that we can count on. So destruction, chapter number 1, declared. Destruction described, chapter number 2. And in chapter 3, destruction defended. Woe to the bloody city. Whew. Sends a chill down your back. Sounds a little bit like Jesus in Matthew 23. Woe unto you, right? And so here's this pronouncement going out, even from God through Nahum. Woe to the bloody city. It is full of lies and robbery. The prey departeth not. The noise of a whip and the noise of the rattling of the wheels and of the prancing horses and the jumping chariots. Just for a second, my head goes back to Exodus 14. What about you? You know, as the children of Israel stood with their backs against the Red Sea, what did they hear? They heard the noise of the rattling of wheels and the prancing horses and the jumping chariots, didn't they? And so it's a highly descriptive language that we're reading here. Verse 3, the horsemen lifted up both the bright sword and the glittering spear, and there's a multitude of slain and a great number of carcasses, and there is none end of their corpses. They stumble upon their corpses. Why? Because of the multitude of the whoredoms of the well-favored harlot, the mistress of witchcrafts that selleth nations through her whoredoms and families through her witchcrafts. And so what we have here, Nineveh's blessings and strengths were used in ungodly ways, right? You know, you think back even in some of the other prophetic announcements of the powers and the authorities, the privileges that the priests had upon their shoulders, and they abused them. You remember Eli's sons. They have a privilege that was given to them, and they abused it. Eli's sons did evil. You think about the privilege that Nadab and Abihu were given as you look at Leviticus chapter 10. They abused a privilege. Here is a people. And again, maybe insert just for a second in your mind, insert USA. We have been given a privilege. We have been given a responsibility. But many will be slain. Revelation says that there is such a thing as the second death. That's where Gehenna hell is entered into by those that would reject God, those that would never obey him. And so notice, because of the multitude of whoredoms, we too can expect a great destruction. Behold, verse 5, I am against thee. Wow, that sounds a whole lot against chapter 2, verse 13. I am against thee, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will discover thy skirts upon thy face, and I will show the nations thy nakedness and the kingdoms thy shame. And I will cast abominable filth upon thee and make thee vile and will set thee as a gazing stock. Those that would pass by then would, what, wag their fingers. Oh, you remember how great Nineveh was. They got what was coming to them, right? And so notice that Nineveh would be a gazing stock. Verse 7, it shall come to pass that all they that look upon thee shall flee from thee and say, Nineveh is laid waste. Who will bemoan her? Whence shall I send comforters for thee? Art thou better than populous No? That is even, I think, the reference we made earlier to Thebes. Thebes was destroyed years earlier, 663, history tells us. And so notice the reference as Nahum looks back. Art thou better than the populace? No. Remember Thebes that was destroyed? Are you better than Thebes? That was situated among the rivers that had the waters round about it, whose rampart was the sea and her wall was from the sea. That's over in Egypt. Notice the fertile land in which they had the Nineveh, you know, the great river. They worshipped the river. Remember, that's one of the first things that Moses hit, you know, before Pharaoh turned the water to blood, contaminated their water that they worshipped. And so notice Nineveh surrounded by, you know, the Euphrates River, you know, surrounded by beautiful waters of abundancy. And look, you're no better than Thebes. You're no better than what happened in 663. Ethiopia, you know, to the south. Egypt, to the north, were her strength. And it was infinite. Put, a city to their east. Lubim, a city that was to the west. I think that's like Libya. Were their helpers, the helpers of Assyria, Ethiopia, Egypt, Put, Lubim. These individuals, north, south, east, and west, were their helpers, yet was she carried away. She went into captivity. Her young children also were dashed in pieces at the top of all the streets, and they cast lots for her honorable men, and all her great men were bound in chains. Look, they had allies all around them, but they were still struck down, right? The same type of an idea rings out of Obadiah. Oh, you think that you're in a place that's made you to be untouchable, but God said through Obadiah, I will bring you down. And today, can you tell me where Edom is? Do you know any Edomites? No, because God's word always comes true. Verse 11, they also shall be drunken. Thou shalt be hid. Thou shalt also seek strength because of the enemy. That is refuge. You're looking for refuge. All thy strongholds shall be like fig trees with their first ripe figs. If they be shaken, they shall even fall into the mouth of the eater. The idea of the ease of overthrow, right? You shake a tree and the figs fall. It's not normally that easy. There is some work involved. But notice the ease of the overthrow of Nineveh, just like shaking a tree. Behold, thy people in the midst of thee are women. The gates of thy land shall be set wide open unto thine enemies. The fire shall devour thy bars. Draw thee waters for thy siege. Fortify thy strongholds. Go into clay and tread the mortar. Make strong the brick kiln. There shall the fire devour thee. No matter what you do to prepare for this great event, it's going to all be in vain. Who can stand against God? It shall eat thee up like the canker worm. Make thyself many as the canker worm. Make thyself many as the locust. Thou hast multiplied thy merchants above the stars of heaven. The canker worm spoileth and fleeth away. Thy crowned are as the locusts, and thy captains as the great grasshoppers, which camp in the hedges in the cold day. But when the sun arises, they flee away, and their place is not known where they are. Thy shepherds slumber, O King Assyria. Thy nobles shall dwell in the dust. Thy people is scattered upon the mountains, and no man gathereth them. Kind of like they did to Israel, right? Spread to the winds. There's no healing of thy bruise. That is, it's a fatal wound. Thy wound is grievous. All that hear the bruit of thee shall clap the hands over thee, for upon whom hath not the wickedness passed continually? When they get the report of the destruction of Syria, they're gonna applaud. Way to go. You got your up and comings. And so it's a rough book to read because of the vengeance that's laid out. But, you know, as we remember verses like Romans 15 and verse 4, these things are written for our learning. What does God think of those that stand against him? Well, you remember as we look back, he's going to bring them down, chapter 1, because of his mighty power. Remember, he said in chapter number 1, thou art vile. That's what he thinks of those that stand against him, those that refuse to bow the knee. In chapter number 2, you remember he says, I am against thee, as he says even in chapter number 3. And then of that great destruction, there is no healing, right? And if we die in that situation, the situation that Nineveh found themselves in, then we can expect that place that Jesus talked about on many occasions. Even as Richard pointed out the other night in his great sermon on hell, we understand that Jesus talked about hell more than he did about heaven. There should be a point there somewhere. We should understand that there is a necessity to know about hell and be warned about hell. And so do what you can today to make your calling sure, so that you can make sure that you are in that place that God has prepared for you, as Jesus taught us in John 14. Because you don't want to go where these Ninevites have gone. You don't believe me? Ask the rich man of Luke 16. He was just begging for a drop of water. It seems like a pleasurable time here and now, as those around us are living luxuriously, even as the scriptures once or twice say deliciously. But Peter said it perfectly. Save yourselves from this unjust or this untoward generation. The same message that Nineveh would once hear and obey, they would turn away from here, and destruction would be theirs. The lesson is yours then. Live for Jesus. And that comes straight to you from the Gospel Radio Network, where we are encouraging you today to live your mornings and your days and your nights for the Master. We love each one of you, and we appreciate you being here today as we study through the book of Nahum. We look forward to the rest of the programming on this channel as wonderful indeed. And so stay tuned for more great programming. Hey, y'all, have a great day, and we'll talk to you later.
Listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.
The power.